Welcome back. I'm Jonathan Capehart. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Jessica Pressler's article, The Insane Plot to Bomb Garden City, Kansas, appears in this week's issue of New York Magazine. The story follows a small militia group who planned to bomb a housing complex that sheltered immigrants and tells how that plot was foiled. And I'm so glad it brings Jessica Pressler to the show today. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
We're going to get into the story because I love how you set it up. But how did you first hear about this?
I heard about it probably right around this time last year after the election. David Miliband, who is the president of the IRC, mm-hmm. the International Rescue Committee, had a private event where he sort of mentioned in passing that this was something that had happened. And I went home and I Googled it and found the complaint, which was really incredibly horrifying and graphic. Also I was interested just that there was a lot of Somali immigrants in this corner of Kansas, which was not something that I knew about at the mm-hmm. time at all.
And in reading, it seems like you had incredible access, unfettered access. Why do you think you were given such access?
Well, it's really time. I spent like a lot of time on it. So it's been about a year. I went back and forth to Kansas a couple of times. I was really interested in getting the sides of the men who were accused of doing this. So I spent a lot of time, you know, talking to them and trying to understand their lives and piecing things mm-hmm. together.
And one of the men, Patrick Stein, mm-hmm. Is someone you talked to. Why do you think he was so willing to talk to you?
I think he really believes that he was wronged in some way. I mean, he's a person who believes that the federal government, you know, and prior to this, believed that the federal government seriously oversteps and is out of control. And this to him was proof of that. I mean, he was mm-hmm. taken in by the feds. So he has a real grievance and thinks that they were set up.
So let's start at the beginning. Garden City. Talk about Garden City, what it was and what it now it seems to have become.
Okay, Garden City is a very small city, southwest Kansas, which is kind of like the exact middle of the country. There's about 27,000 people there. And it's just kind of got this frontier mentality. It was founded by this buffalo hunter back in the 19th century. And, you know, it's over the years always been a very diverse place. Taking in refugees is not uncharacteristic for it. It's kind of an amazing, compassionate, lovely little community in the heartland.
And is Patrick Stein born and raised?
No. Everybody's very clear with me in Garden City that these guys are not from Garden City. This is very uncharacteristic behavior for Garden City, which really takes a lot of pride in being a welcoming place.
So welcoming that didn't the local police force did cultural understanding and cultural training.
Right.
And why was it that Garden City, this place, as you said, is like smack dab in the middle of Kansas, not near any of the coast, was so attractive to immigrants, whether they were from Mexico or whether they're from Somalia?
Right. Well, they have these large beef packing plants. They've always kind of cycled through these various industries. In the 80s, early 90s, Tyson moved there, National Beef, these giant meat packing companies, and there's a lot of jobs.
So you start out the story with Patrick mm-hmm. and a friend of his who yell out their pickup truck window at these immigrant women, really insulting, derogatory remark. And it seemed like they are spoiling for some kind of confrontation. Meanwhile, you bring in this woman, Ifra. Talk about Ifra.
Ifra is a community leader in the Somali community in Garden City. It's a fairly small community. Nobody can really say how many people there are, but it's about 200 people. She lives a few blocks. There's various apartment complexes that tend to have a lot of Somali immigrants in them. And so she's a person who people go to when they need help with things. She speaks a lot of different languages and dialects. And she's a person that Somalis who have just arrived there, like if they need help communicating something to a doctor or like they need a ride to the store, she'll help them.
Mm-hmm. And this idea that Ifra is someone who is, you know, who can be helpful, this comes from her time from when she basically fled from Nairobi, made her way through Uganda to a refugee camp. And there she sort of shined as someone, as a translator, as a connector, really, for folks in the camps. And so once she got to Garden City, Kansas, it was just a natural thing for her to be a focal point for immigrants. No?
Right, right. She helps immigrants, and she's also very like connected within the larger community. There's not just Somali people there. There's Vietnamese people. There's a large Burmese population. There's Mexican people. There's a lot of different immigrants, and she kind of knows everyone in town. So she was introduced to me as just a person who knows everybody, and she was.
Okay, so I'm sorry if I'm jumping around a bit, but the contrast between Ifra, mm-hmm, and Patrick Stein and his crew, American-born crew of guys, is very telling. Now, let's bring back Patrick, and you mentioned it early on that, you know, he feels that he was set up by the government, feels let down by the government. Talk about Patrick's history and how he got to this point of being a part of a militia.
Okay, so Patrick Stein grew up in Wright, Kansas, which is this very small town kind of outside of Dodge City, which you've heard of people saying that they want to get out of. He is a person who kind of struggled with being from a small town. I think he maybe had like a larger personality than his town and where he came from, and had a few massive economic failures, tried to start a company that didn't work out, got in some trouble with the law, and was really kind of like at his wit's end in sort of like early 2008, and maybe started to lose it a little bit, I think, reading a lot of right-wing and conspiracy-type commentary on the internet, and just taking in kind of like the worst of what we have been experiencing.
Right, the worst of the internet.
Right.
How much did the terrorist attacks of 9/11 play into his sort of erosion?
Yeah, he told me that 9/11 was like a game changer for him because he felt like he had thought up until that point that the federal government was taking care of things, that they were in charge, and then it just felt like a major, I think, loss of control. I think it felt like that for a lot of people. Just that they didn't really know what was going on and like what's happening. That was a major loss of control for him. And I think it sort of started to radicalize him a little bit. I'll use that word. And then after that, the financial crisis of 2008 was another like big kind of radicalization moment for him. This company that he tried to start fell apart.
Is this involving the family farm or separate from the farm?
It was involving the family farm. Yeah, they were trying to start a biofuel company, and it fell apart. And I think again, it was like the federal government, like they're the ones doing it, like they're screwing me kind of mentality. And then I think after that, he kind of went into this wormhole that really, you know, radicalized it.
I'm Jonathan Capehart speaking with Jessica Pressler about her latest article for New York Magazine, The Insane Plot to Bomb Garden City, Kansas. It's in this week's edition of New York Magazine. Okay, so Patrick Stein decides after like slowly swirling down this wormhole into conspiracy theories, decides to join a militia and then splinters off and forms his own militia.
Right.
And so then when does the plot start to get hatched?
Okay, so yeah, a lot of people join militias in 2008 and 2012. There was like a huge uptick for some reason, 2008, 2012. I don't know what it would have been.
The election of the first black president, but so, I just need that
right,
out there.
Right. So he joined the militia, and I think that the thing with militias is that they're not proactive. The point is to train and protect the country in the event of a disaster. And I think his reasoning was more like, I want to go do something. Like, I want to change things. I want to, you know, he was probably frustrated by the militia just waiting for something to happen. So I think that he hooked up with these other guys and he was trying to kind of like get something going, he would say.
But when you join a militia, I mean, in that time, the militia was all about overthrow of the government that is overreaching into people's lives. I mean, it makes me think of Timothy McVeigh, Ruby Ridge, he was in that mindset.
Yeah.
Not in the like Revolutionary War mentality
not
of the militia.
Dressing up in costumes and firing muskets.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. That is the type of militia. Yeah. It was more like, we need to do something to turn this country around. He would say, like, we have to wake people up. I mean, basically, he became a terrorist. And he was, you know, like, we have to change things by doing an action that is going to wake people up. And that action became, like, we're going to murder a bunch of people.
And militia groups, are they mainstream in Middle America? Or was Patrick Stein joining something that even in Middle America is considered on the fringe?
I wouldn't say they're mainstream, but I don't think that they're fringe either. I think that there are a lot of them. They're popular, but they aren't... They don't have, like, websites.
Right. It's word of
it's
mouth.
It's like you can't sign... You can't just show up and, like, start, you know, signing up. You can't join, like, a listserv. It's like... it's a word of mouth thing. It's a little bit under the radar. Mm-hmm. It's actually very under the radar. So it's not mainstream, but it's not uncommon at all.
You say there's a rule you can only belong to one...
Well, I don't know if there's a rule per se, but it's kind of frowned upon to belong to more than one, yes.
All right. And one more question before we get into how this plot was foiled.
Okay.
What impact did the Trump candidacy have on militias and folks feeling empowered to act on what was maybe kept secret within a militia?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, nobody was like Trump. Nobody was taking, as far as I know, direct direction from what he was saying as a candidate. But I do think that it was empowering to hear that kind of rhetoric coming from, you know, a high place. I mean, Trump said during his candidacy, you know, Somali refugees might be posing as terrorists. He said, you know, he told that apocryphal story about General Pershing shooting Muslims with arrows dipped in pig's blood,
yeah.
Which was these guys repeated. Like, they were like, let's get pig's blood so we can, like, dip our arrows in them if we use our bow. So, I mean, it had an effect. I think it was, like, it excited people. It got people going a little bit.
And so they hatched this plot to blow up or attack where immigrants and Somali immigrants live in Garden City, Kansas. But the plot was foiled. They were infiltrated.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that happen?
Well, now you're making me give away the story.
Well, you know, I have a habit of doing that. So get right up to the line.
So it turned out that that at one point while they were plotting this, their group was joined by somebody who was working as an informant for the FBI, who wore a wire and recorded a lot of their conversations leading up to this plot. And, you know, at one point, you know, got someone from Quantico, Virginia to come and kind of show them guns and explosives and be like, you can use these in your attack. So, you know, they were caught. They were caught.
How close did they come to actually pulling this off?
So it's interesting. Nobody really knows, because what happened was they were doing this investigation of this group, and then one of the guys got arrested for beating up his girlfriend or wife. Nobody is sure if she was his girlfriend or wife. But he got arrested for domestic assault, and it accelerated things a little bit. They were now like, okay, he's in jail. The local cops have found all of his guns and his manifesto. And so now we have to, like, quick, you know, jump in and arrest them. So it's hard to say, like, how much longer it would have gone on. The investigation was 10 months long. It was a really long time that they spent following these guys around and listening to them and gathering reams of material that is incredibly horrifying to read.
All right. So I don't want to give away that part of the thing. But talk about... to bring it full circle, Ifra and the immigrant community, how did they react to this?
So it was actually kind of very heartwarming and amazing. I mean, they were very upset. These are people who have had horrible things happen to them. Like, a lot of them have come out of just mind-bogglingly terrible circumstances. So to hear that there was somebody planning violence against them in this place that they got to that was safe was very upsetting and destabilizing. And I think some people left town. But the police took care of them. They assured them that they were safe. And I think the community was better for it in the end.
I've been speaking with Jessica Pressler about her story, The Insane Plot to Bomb Garden City, Kansas. It'll be out in the latest issue of New York Magazine and will be on nymag.com this week. Jessica, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.